Welcome back to the Side B Anthology. It's been a really, really long time since I've put out an episode, and it's not for lack of desire. It was for lack of direction. But through this extended break, I've kind of figured out where I want to go next with this podcast. So I was just reading my own short stories for a while, but you know, it's not like I churn those out all that quickly, so that kind of left really long gaps in between the episodes that I was putting out. So I thought that I would kind of go back to what I was originally doing, which is to say, reading classics. And originally what I was doing was reading mostly Grimm's fairy tales. But that's not what I'm going to do now. What I'm going to do for the next however many episodes it takes is I'm going to read chapter by chapter a novel that I inherited from my grandma. So, and I've never actually read this novel in full. It was published in 1907, and it had been at my grandma's house for longer than I've been alive. So I've never actually read the novel in full. I have read little passages here and there. I've flipped through the pages, but I've never read it in full, so I thought it would be really interesting to read it in full for the Side B Anthology and kind of discover it together. So a little bit more background. This book was a book that my grandma used to use to prop open the windows in the bedrooms upstairs in her house. And she lived near the ocean, so the books were kind of always getting or being bathed in sea air. So this book is a little bit weather-worn. And it's got slight divots in the cover because of the fact that it was kind of just shoved in between the window and the windowsill to keep the window open, because it was her windows upstairs were like, it's a fairly old house, so the windows, like, either they stuck or they just, because the frames were wood, so either they stuck and they wouldn't budge at all, or if you pushed them open or pulled them open, they wouldn't actually stay up. They would just fall if you didn't prop them with something. So instead of using little wooden beams or something, my grandma just took old books and she stuck them in the windows to keep them open on warm days. So this was one such book, and the cover caught my eye. I was really intrigued by it. And so that one, along with two others, I took from her house with her permission. One of the last times I ever visited her before she passed away. So my grandma, she was a really warm, loving, quiet, shy sort of woman. And because I lived so far away from her, I only got to see her in person every 2 to 3 years. I lived very near to her when I was really, really young, but as I grew older, we moved away, and I only got to see her every few years. So I didn't have that much of a relationship with her. So yeah, I don't really know where I'm going with that thought, but I didn't have that much of a relationship with her. But when I did get to see her, she was always so warm and so loving, and I just loved getting to spend time with my grandma when I was able to. She taught me how to fry cod tongues on the stove, and she made the most delicious cookies and the best macaroni and cheese casserole and the tastiest stew. So whenever it was cold outside, she would make a huge pot of stew for everyone that was over, and it was just warm, good, hearty food. Comfort food, you know. And as I said, she was very shy and quiet. So even though we have that side of my family is huge, and we would have huge family reunions and get-togethers, she would always be in the middle of the action, but she would usually just be rocking in her rocking chair and smiling and listening to everyone and commenting now and again. But she was always just kind of a quiet listener, and that, as someone who I myself am quite am often quite quiet, especially in crowds, it felt like this little thing that me and my grandma shared that my other cousins, who were a little bit louder and more extroverted, didn't necessarily share with her. I guess it was in my mind when I was younger, it was this way of trying to feel like I was connected to her and to my family, to notice that detail. I don't really know where I'm going with that, sorry. And she taught me, to make some of her kind of specialty cookies as well, which was really, really special. I still have those recipes from when she taught them to me. And the last time we ever, at least I think it was the last time we ever spoke over the phone, and she was still fairly lucid and could still recognize me and other people and remember things. She told me two anecdotes that just made me so happy, and it was that the first one was that she told me that when she was really young, she was really shy and quiet and didn't really talk to people and felt nervous about talking to people. And as someone who has social anxiety disorder, not that my grandma really knew that, but it made me feel like I wasn't weird. It made me feel so comforted to know that my grandma also had a lot of difficulty connecting to people when she was younger. She has no idea how much that anecdote meant to me. And then the other one was that she was telling me with a lot of delight that when she was a young adult, when she got her first job, I think it was at a general store, she said that she was so excited because when she got her first job, she got to open her very own bank account and start saving her own money. And that just, I don't know, that just made me so happy. And the next anecdote is not something that she told me herself, I don't think, but something that I learned later, which is that her father, my great-grandfather, was quite strict, and he did not approve of my grandfather, who my grandma fell madly in love with. Well, they both fell in love with each other. And this didn't deter her. And what they did was she and my grandfather just went to another town and they eloped and got married. And they stayed together. They just, yeah. I did meet my grandfather, but he passed away when I was very, very young, so I didn't really know him. But just the stories that I've heard of him, he was a pretty awesome man. He was a volunteer firefighter, and he did a whole bunch of other odd jobs, and again, he and my grandma were just so in love their whole lives together. And anyway, I'm just kind of saying whatever comes to mind. My grandma was just such a wonderful person, and she passed away several years ago, and I did actually get to go see her before that happened and say goodbye, even though I'm not sure she actually recognized me or knew that it was me there, but I held her hand and just was there. And sometimes that's enough. And so yeah, I guess I'm dedicating this series of episodes to her. I don't know if she ever actually read this book, so you know, either this is me kind of sharing like the experience of reading the book for the first time with the memory of her, or this is me discovering a book that she once read and I guess liked because she kept the book all those years. She could have gotten rid of it, but she didn't. So without further ado, let's start reading. So this book is called The Princess and the Plowman by Florence Morse Kingsley. And as I said, it was published in 1907. So quite a long time ago. And when I open the cover, there is actually a dedication on the cover. It is not a dedication to my grandma. So I guess she got this book secondhand because I don't recognize these names. So it says, to Letitia Feener from Alan Stevenson. I wonder who they were. The Princess and the Plowman, Chapter 1. A wild wind blowing in from the open sea came upon the softer spirit of earth brooding over blooming gardens, burgeoning woods, and low-lying meadows lush with grasses, and meeting thus the two clasped and mingled, then stooping to earth, rushed with soft clamor of shaken leaves through groves and thickets, ruffled into fretted silver the blue of pools and streams, snatched the breath of a million blossoms, and bore it all living into the streets and alleys of the crowded town, pausing midway in prankish mischief to whirl a sheaf of white pages from the lap of a girl who sat under the shelter of a wide-spreading tree. The girl followed the unlooked-for soaring of her thoughts with startled eyes of clearest gray. Then she sprang up and pursued them with swift-footed energy as they danced and fluttered high overhead like giant butterflies drunk with the wine of summer. A pair of these literary vagrants swooped and hovered irresolute in a tangle of meadowsweet and wild roses. The girl caught them with a little cry of triumph, leaving a fragment of her pink gown in the rose thicket as she dashed after a third page, which whirled in mad spiral flight across the bed of a brook. Splashing through the shallow water with reckless feet, she captured her prize as it hesitated upon the verge of a freshly plowed field, across which the far glimmer of a fourth and fifth could be seen skimming the ground like homing swallows. The pursuer stopped for an instant to glance ruefully at her wet white shoes, then, gathering her skirts in both hands, gave chase with renewed ardor. A man who had been deliberately driving a deep, subsoiling plow through the stiff loam on the farther side of the field pulled up his horses and stood watching the pink figure and its difficult approach across the steep furrows, a twinkle of amused comprehension dawning in his eyes as the girl, she had almost reached him now, pounced upon one of the flying pages. The fifth and last was blowing directly towards him with wavering sidelong swoops, as if half-minded to surrender at discretion. The man reached out and caught it deftly. It was a large, fair page, well covered with small, firm writing. Where her delicate feet had touched the earth, green herbage flowering sprang, he read. Love tracked her steps, an enchanted longing passed her. Pressed hard after. He would have read further, being, obviously, quite unaware of the impropriety of his action, but the girl's hand was already outstretched towards her elusive query. "Please, give it to me," she said, breathing hard. "It is my theme on the poetry of Hesiod. The wind blew it away just as I was finishing it." He turned to look at her with the fine deliberation which he had been bestowing upon the stiff clods of earth his mighty plow had turned up glistening to the sun. "It is very beautiful," he said slowly. "What you have written, I mean. It would have been a pity to lose it." He surrendered his prize with an apologetic glance at his brown hands. The girl rapidly sorted the recovered pages. "Yes," she said in a preoccupied way, "and that last page was quite the most important of all." The man surveyed her with grave attention as he stood, quite unaware of his eyes, her slender shape in its swathing draperies of pink drooping a little over the earth-stained pages of her manuscript, her heavy hair, half fallen from its careless fastenings, glistening like ripe leaves in the broad light of approaching noon, her bosom rising and falling with the deep breath of her flight. His slow, meditative eyes took definite note of the gracious curves of her red mouth, parted a little to ease the tumultuous heartbeats of her gray eyes, darkly fringed like clear pools under a twilight sky, of her long hands, white and exquisitely maternal as the hands of a Madonna. Behind her, the plowed field spread its warm browns and grays in subtle harmony. He sighed regretfully as she glanced about her with manifest intention of renewed flight. He would have liked to look at her longer. "It will be easier to regain the road from this side," he suggested. "The plowed ground is hard to walk over." "But I didn't come from the road," she said. "I was sitting under a tree writing, and the wind carried my pages away. I ran after them. I didn't know nor care where." "Where did you come from when you sat down under the tree to write?" he asked. "I have always lived about here," he added, with a grave smile. Her eyes looked at him calmly. She was noticing, for the first time, that he was young and possessed of a tall, powerful body. His face, now that she observed it, would not have attracted her second glance, since it was, in common with many faces of men, plain, large-featured, clean-shaven. His eyes, blue and penetrating, met her own with a clear directness of gaze. "If you will tell me where you are stopping," he repeated tentatively. "Of course," she murmured. "I am always so stupid. I am staying at Dr. Vivian's cottage. It can't be far." "No," he agreed. "You have only to cross this bit of pasture and yonder meadow. The house is hidden behind the trees just at the crest of the hill. There is a brook between the meadow and the wood, but it isn't deep." The girl looked down at her muddy shoes with a pucker of her white forehead. "I know just how deep it is," she replied. "I waded through it once this morning. I shan't mind doing it again. I think I ought to tell you that my name is Mary Adams. I am sorry I have kept you from your work, and I thank you." She turned abruptly and walked away, her drabbled pink gown trailing the stubble. The man followed her with his eyes till she had disappeared behind the leafy hedge. Then he gripped the handles of his plow. His obedient horses bent their gleaming flanks to the strain, and again the tough sod of the pasture yielded in a lengthening furrow of brown earth. As if I faltered right at the end. Imagine that. These pages are all kind of stained with age and maybe with sea air. And the and I think it's just for, oh no, it's every page. So every page under the title at the top, there's kind of a ribbon with flowers drawn on it, and it looks like someone took yellow crayons and drew and colored them in. And I have to wonder if it was maybe my mom or one of my aunts or uncles that did that when they were younger. I don't know. Thank you for joining me for this first revival episode of the Side B Anthology. So once again, that was chapter 1 of The Princess and the Plowman. If you're listening to this in the morning, then good morning. I hope you have a good day and you encounter something delightful over the course of the day. And if you're listening to this at night, then good night. I hope you have strange and wonderful dreams. See you next time.